score. There's one rule.
All right. Let's get going.
Doing this a little different.
We're doing this a little different, but that's okay. That's okay. Just getting checked here. All right. So, everybody, welcome to the Persimmon Pub. This is our first actual podcast.
Yep.
From inside the Persimmon Pub with our new equipment, our new PA system, where we're going to be
season
talking.
Season 2.
Yeah, season 2. Kickoff of season 2. Yeah. That's huge.
Big mindset focus this season, and it's become an important component into how I run my junior programs, ladies programs, coach my tour players, etc. So,
we're going to get into that.
So for those of you who don't know what the Champions Playbook is, or is this your first time witnessing it live, Scott is a published author here. He's got a book called The Champions Playbook, and we basically talk about anything according to the mindset of the game. And we have some mechanical
stuff. Strategy, yeah.
And some some course management, some strategy that can help you guys shoot a lower score, which is Scott's one rule. So this is our kickoff of season 2. We've produced over 130 episodes of the Champions Playbook, which is huge. And we're going to be here every Wednesday night for food and drink specials talking about the game and how you guys can shoot lower scores.
And you'll see those advertised more in the coming weeks. This is our first kind of big run at it. So
yeah. And
and it'll get warmer, too. It'll be a lot more fun to do out on the back patio.
Absolutely. And we've got a segment here on one of our episodes called Ask Sherlock, where we basically have a microphone set up for you guys, and you guys get to ask questions to Scott. It's like getting a little mini lesson on the go, where you can ask any question about your golf game, and Scott will answer it, which is super cool.
Or just general golf knowledge, whatever, if you have questions about something. So
exactly. So we're going to kick it off. Scott, we're talking about
consistently inconsistent.
Consistently
is a topic.
Inconsistent.
Yeah.
Which I feel like is a big topic for a lot of people, right? Because like everybody is wondering how they can take strokes off their game, and what does that tell us? That means that you're consistently inconsistent sometimes.
Right. Well, you know, one of the commonly misheld beliefs and the questions I get all the time is like, well, how do I be more consistent? I can't tell you how many times that comes up in a lesson. I just want to be more consistent. The issue is you already are consistent. So if you walk into any handicap computer and you look at a range of scores, the vast majority of people are between 10 and 12 strokes. So really what my job is as an instructor, and any instructor that you go see, is to take that whole range and shift it down. So let's say your range is 85 to 95. My job is really to take that and go shift it to 80 to 90.
Yeah.
And then try and shift it another notch down there from 75 to 85. So like even the tour players go from like 62 to 72 or 65 to 75. And so the lower you can shift that range, the better opportunities you have to shoot lower scores.
What do you usually see too, like from people who are in that stereotypical 10 to 12 handicap, or like even the 10 to 12 handicap, you know, the 5 to 10 handicap and the 1 to 5 handicap, or like, are there any consistencies that you see within those types of players?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the real quick general one is, you know, fundamental work. Mm-hmm. But let me go at it this way, and then I'll kind of answer that specifically. So the golf game can be broken down into a couple of basic areas. Putting represents 40% of the game. Play inside of 100 yards, not on the green, is another 25%, and driving's another 20%. So just those three components together, you have 85% of the game. So that's one of the issues, is first acknowledging the fact that those are the biggest areas for people to work on. And a lot of people come to me wanting to work on their iron play when it's only 15% of the deal. And so
only 15% of the problem.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
And so like a lot of times I'll get them to hit it better and they're like, "Man, I'm hitting so many more greens, but my scores still aren't lower." It's like, "Well, that's because that's only 15% of the game, so your overall effect, think of an investment portfolio, like that only makes up a tiny tiny component of your investment portfolio, and so even if it's got massive increases, if the rest of it's at a deficiency, you're not going to see a massive increase." So
yeah.
I would say this, if you could break handicap levels down from thank you very much. This is great. If you can break that down by 0 to 5 handicap or less than 5 handicap, including scratch players, you're looking at mostly the ability to hit the ball closer and execute on your short game. So it's like getting it closer to get under a 5 handicap allows you to make more birdies, has more birdie opportunities.
Yeah, that makes sense too, because like in my game, and you know my game really well, it's like, as long as I can get it off the tee and put myself in a position to score, what I'm trying to work on right now is scoring, right? That proximity on my approach shot.
Correct. Well, and so then that leads kind of the next phase, which is kind of where you're at, is moving into that sub 10 handicap level. To me there, it's the driver's got to be in play.
Yep.
Like it's got to be consistently step out there one. In front of you. It doesn't really matter how far it is. Far is important, but it's not nearly as important as you being able to get it in play and then be able to execute on your short game. Notice that I skipped proximity to the hole. Mm. So being able to get it inside of that range.
Yeah.
And then most of your 10 to 20 handicaps, which you kind of need some just basic fundamentals across the board. So we're doing Operation 36 for our beginning ladies and our juniors, and we start them from 25 yards, and they work back based on their ability to shoot 36 or better from there. It's amazing when you just put average people in at 25 to 50 yards, how poorly they do from that distance.
Gotcha. Yeah.
And
yeah.
So like, oh, I can shoot 36. That's not going to be a problem. And then you quickly see like, oh, I just made a 4 on the first 3 holes from 25 yards.
Yeah.
And so being able to really execute that part of the game is an important quick way to get down from a 20 down to under sub 15s.
Would you say that the people who are even like sub 5, that's where they're going to pick up the most strokes as well?
Yeah. Well, in sub 5 is about eliminating what I like to call unforced errors. And being able to win, if we're looking at the collegiate level, is being able to execute on some advanced strategy stuff that we've been talking about recently on the podcast. So if you're just tuning into the podcast for the first time, I challenge you to go back and look at some of those episodes. We talk about the BPN and OP, some unique things.
Our winner episodes from Inside the Pro Shop.
Right. Yeah, that's yeah. right. That's right. So challenge you to go look at those areas. It's a massively important component to be able to get sub-zero handicap.
Gotcha. So when we're talking about the listener who's going to listen to this mm-hmm. or possibly is listening right now,
yeah.
what is one thing that you think they can take away from this podcast to help them be consistently less consistent in their current ways, if that makes any sense, right? So like how can somebody work on being more consistently good out on the course?
Well, the first one I would do, I actually talk about in the last chapter of my book, is about going through your bag and highlighting clubs as green, yellow, or red clubs. You actually can take some electrical tape.
Yep.
You know, we have that colored electrical tape.
Yep, yep.
And go ahead and identify your green clubs. Like, those are the clubs that you can count on. You know you can rely on at least 6 or 7 out of 10 times.
Oh, that's good, yeah.
Like, go ahead and identify those and wrap a little piece of green tape right around above, right below the grip. The next one I would have you put in there would be the yellow ones. Actually, I go the red ones first. Like, these are ones I can't count on. Like, if you put me in the middle of the fairway on 18 and ask me to try and hit on the island green, like, there's no chance that I'm going to make this work out well. Take those completely out of your bag. Mm. I know this sounds crazy. I've had a couple people do this, and they're amazed at the results. Take those out. Don't even have the temptation to use them. And it goes against convention to go, well, I only need to play. You mean I only have 7 clubs in my bag? Yeah. I had a guy drop. I had a guy drop 11 strokes this winter simply off of going from 14 clubs to 7. So being able to get uncomfortable with that. And then your yellow clubs, you need to make sure you use in a scenario where
you're comfortable.
Yeah, or yeah. where there's not – you can hit it some of the time, so probably 4 to 6 out of 10. But it's – the dispersion's a little bit unpredictable, but you're in a scenario where that's okay. So, like, if you're somebody who can't get over the hazard on 4 or 7 – out here over the bridge or at the bridge hitting it over that hazard, and you grab one of those 4 to 6 clubs, that yellow marking club, you're really going to struggle to execute that because now you've added the mental pressure of having to hit it over the water. Like, grab a club you can hit over. Like, okay, well, I'm back further than I want. So make sure that the penalty associated with using those yellow clubs is very low.
Makes sense. And how would you go about adding clubs into the mix after that?
Well, I think that's where you use your range time to figure out which clubs are, can we move this into the green category? Can I move this red club into my yellow category? The other thing that does, it's really helpful to any instructor you go to see. I mean, come and see me. I would love to help you with that. But like, if they already know what those red clubs are and what those yellow clubs are, we don't have to waste our time on the green clubs. We can go ahead and quickly get at the issue for you, or at least how you perceive the issue being.
Yeah. And it also, if you're following the strategy, it gives you, the instructor, the ability to now then use that time more wisely, correct?
Yeah, yeah.
So now you can really focus on using those red clubs and making them into yellow clubs, per se.
Yeah, and early on in my book, I talk about how we perceive the game, you know, using phrases like, you know, I just don't know what happened today. Well, hang on a second.
Yeah, wait.
Wait. Don't go there yet. using things like, well, you know, one day I have it and the next day I don't. Like, I shoot good on the front nine and bad on the back nine.
Yeah.
Was it just because I'm tired? People have struggled generally at self-perception. Like, we're really poor at that self-identity, like what's really going on. And so it's being able to help people identify when you finish a round, there's always a pattern. That's the thing I challenge people. Like, there's a pattern, and it's not just I'm good on the front and bad on the back. There's something either mentally, physically, club selection, shot selection, strategy that you got away with on the front nine that you're not going to get away with on the back nine. There is a pattern in there. And when I go on the golf course with players, my job is to help them identify that pattern. But you can do that for yourself. It's just simply asking, like, people go, well, what happened? Well, then I go, why it happened? Well, okay, I hit 12 greens and I hit 7 fairways and I shot 81. And I had 32 putts. Well, that tells me what happened, but it doesn't tell me why it happened. And so, like, you've got to get behind those stats and figure out what is actually causing them. Why are they that high or that low, whatever it may be?
I think something, too, that we're not necessarily mentioning, because for those of you who are just now tuning into season two, we're big on mindset here on this podcast, right? And so I think all these strategies that Scott's talking about also has to be implemented with the fact that you have a growth mindset about your game, right? I learned or I saw this today on, I think it was on social media or something like that, where somebody was like, don't use your handicap as a ceiling, right? For like as good as you can get, right? You need to push in order for you to get better, better and better further out onto the season, right? So it's like, I think everything that you're saying here has to come with a grain of salt of like, you as a player have to really believe that you can take those strokes off your game as well. And I think that's a big roadblock that a lot of players, amateur players, come in contact with a lot.
Well, that reminds me of something. Right before I moved up here to Birmingham, I worked with a gentleman for 3 years. He's in his 60s. Couldn't break 100 when we started. Yeah, get yourself some pizza. Break 100 when we started, and had this goal of breaking 80. And he's had all sorts of surgeries, knee problems, isn't mobile, overweight. Like, he's got all of these things going against him. Now, he started walking, so he's trying to lose a little weight to make it easier to move. Dude was out there grinding every single day. Not the guy that, like, you would expect to get good at the game. The Saturday that I left to drive up here to start I guess it was first weekend of April last year, he sends me a text that morning, and he says, for the first time ever, I broke 80. So in three years,
nice. He
went from not being able to do it to being able to break 80. He shot 78, and then he shot 79 the next weekend. So I haven't heard from him since, but his name's Terry, if he's listening to this. Terry, you know him. Terry Johnson. Awesome guy. It was really cool to see him grind and work. Like, to your point, everybody around him was like, dude, you're never going to break 80. They all put a ceiling. He didn't have a ceiling. And so I've even had players go, you know, I'd really like to shoot 85 this year. What have you shot so far? Well, my lowest score is 90. I was like, well, I can drop 5 strokes off. You got all year?
Yeah,
you
give
me all year, and you're going to work all year. Like, I'd like to challenge you, like, let's put that at 80.
Totally, yeah.
It doesn't guarantee you to get 80, but if we aim for 80, we're definitely going to get 85, and we're probably going to get 81, 82, 83. And so take the ceiling off of what you can be capable of doing. Work as hard as you can and get as low as you can get. So,
I love that. Yeah, that's great.
So you have to be consistent in your thoughts. Okay, so let me add this in. So if I walk this driving range, I did this back in Birmingham one time. I was like, okay, so what are you working on? What are you thinking about? And you ask them every single time, like every ball they hit, what are you thinking about? I will get a list of different thoughts every single time. Now, they may say they're working on the same thing. Like, okay, keep my head down, keep my head back, keep my head still. Now, your brain translates those three different ways. They're not the same thought. They're not the same feel. So many people want to be consistent, and I ask them in the start of their lesson, and by the time we're 5 balls in, I've had 3 different swing thoughts. Entirely different swing thoughts. And so,
which creates
like
3 different swings at the end of the
right,
day.
Right, right. So if you can't be consistent in your thoughts, then there's no way you can be consistent in your outcome. Like, if you go to the gym and you lift heavy for 3 days, and then you decide to do a long distance training the next week, and then you decide to do triathlon training the next week, like, you're never going to get the body or performance that you want out of whatever it is. Like, you have to have a clear direction where you're going and execute that over and over and over again. So in order to be consistent, you first have to have consistent thoughts. Even if it's the wrong thought, I would rather you be consistent in producing the same thought over and over and over and over and over again until you do it.
That's one thing that I was figuring out too. I was playing with this guy a couple weeks ago, and he was talking about how, like, he was over the ball, and then after he hit a shot and it ended up in a bad place, he was like, well, you know, I just had, you know, I had three different things, you know, that I was, you know, was going through my head. And I was like, well, in my head, I was thinking, well, why don't you just stick to one and see what it does? Because then you, like, then you're isolating your variables, right? Once you isolate your variables, then you can decide, okay, I just left the club face open. Okay, my body turned before me. Like, you're able to, like, digest those feelings so much easier than being like, well, I don't know if it was X, Y, or Z. But if you just say that it's X, then you can work on fixing X, and then Y's next, and then Z to come.
Correct. So our brains work exactly like a giant science experiment. It's really pretty straightforward. So it's looking to solve problems. If you keep giving it a different thing to do, it's having a hard time taking all the data in and go, okay, wait, what is attached to what? So as soon as you can attach, okay, if I do this every time, that produces a certain ball flight outcome, even if it's not good, your brain begins to associate those types of behaviors with that outcome.
And you're,
but if you're changing all the time, it's like, well, this data is really muddy, which is why a lot of research gets thrown out, because bad research produces inconsistent data, and so you can't continue to get better.
You're also big on finding, like, you know, you relate it to, like, dials, right? It's like, well, I want you to find the far left of the dial, and then I want,
like,
you to find
them all right there.
Right. I want you to find the far left, and then I want you to find the far right, and then you're able to tweak in the middle, right? And I feel like if you're having to play with three dials to figure out the perfect outcome instead of just playing with one dial, then you're going to be able to get better quicker.
The other thing about the golf swing is it is the most complex athletic movement in all of sports. And so I'm not saying it's the hardest. I'm just saying it's the most complex of all the athletic movements.
Yeah.
And so my job is really to find the one thing that fixes, like, six, seven, or eight others. Most people are trying to, I got to fix this, and I got to fix this, and I got to fix this,
ooh,
and I got to fix this.
Yeah. That's good.
It's like, well, which one's causing which? Like, if I can fix this one over here, it has a spillover effect into others.
Yeah.
I try and keep track of, like, how many things I'm fixing at a time. Right now, mostly, I'm around 6 to 8 different things in a swing. If I'm working on a swing correctly, I'll fix one. And if I work on two things in your swing, I'm probably fixing north of 10 things at once with two.
Yeah.
If you go to a quality instructor, and I've had great training back in Birmingham for 10 years, like, you learn to be able to figure out the cause and effect and being able to pick that one thing that has a massive impact on the improvement in their game.
Yeah.
So that, to me, is kind of the secret of being a great instructor and being able to, that's the fun part for me, right? You know, that's why Erica started calling me Sherlock this year. She's like, you saw them in five, like, 2 to 5 swings, and you knew exactly what was wrong, and it's like, hey, let's fix this. So that was the 15-minute evals last year. And I'm looking at all these evals going, all right, I'm just going to do an evaluation to kind of get you in clinics and kind of figure out where we need to go and be able to put people together with similar motor patterns, et cetera. And I looked at Erica. I was like, yeah, 15 minutes? Like, I've got 7 left. I can fix it. Should I go ahead and do it? So a lot of those 15-minute evals turned into fixes, and people think, oh, it's a quick fix. I don't do quick fixes. I do the fix. That's the permanent change to a lot of long-term stuff as well.
Sweet. Well, I think that's a great way to end it right here. Next up is going to be our Ask Sherlock episode, so y'all think of some questions and bring them up to the microphone. That's going to be your one-on-one time with Scott, and then hopefully the people listening can learn something too. So with all that, this is going to be the first episode of this week. Welcome to Season 2, Episode 1.
Yep.
I guess episode 2, technically. We had our little dress
rehearsal.
Yeah,
we did.
Bit of post.
But this is like the full, like,
this
first
is like
one.
The full one. Yeah. So this is, I guess, officially Season 2, Episode 2. But it's the first one from inside the swimming club here. So hold on tight, and we'll be right back. Peace.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to the Champions Playbook podcast. Trying to get you to shoot lower scores. The first step to do that, go buy a copy of my book on Amazon, The Champions Playbook, Thinking Your Way to Lower Scores. And no, it's not what you think. You're actually going to think before you hit the shot, not while you're hitting the shot. Well, and I'll also say this. Go check me out on Instagram, at shassygolf. That's 2 S's, 2 E's. shassygolf. I've got all sorts of free content on there. I've got Student of the Week. I'll let you know when all my podcasts are coming available. So go check it out. And I'm here to help you do that very one thing. Shoot a lower score.